Coming to you live from the center of the Larkin Deadlands, it's this week's Apocalypse. I'm your co-host, Kevin Lenihan. With me, as always, perched on a neat little rock, is John Ferris. John, how are you doing today?
Yay!
Hooray! Why are you saying hooray?
Death awaits us on the sands.
Oblivion! Yay! Okay, yes, so... Well, we were very lucky to find these rocks for now, I have to say.
Yes.
We were on our way to Tesco's in Lurgan, and we got a little lost, and we ended up in the middle of a sort of a horrible, sun-blasted, nightmarish, arid desert.
You already mentioned we're in Lurgan. Ooh.
Apologies to everyone from Lurgan. We're sorry you have to live there. but I really want to get out of Lurgan, said everyone who ever came to Lurgan. So
anyone not from Northern Ireland, this is going right over their heads.
I know. But anyway, our car is like, I don't know, like 50 to 100 feet away. But the sand is, there's something under the sand. There was another fellow with us. His name was Disposable Jim.
Yeah.
He went to get some sandwiches from the car and met a sticky end, let's say. Giant worms under the sand, John. It's finally happened.
Yep.
I always said.
You did.
And no one believed me.
The people, like, forcibly laughed at you.
I know. I was like, let's not go to the beach. I heard there's giant worms under the sand. And they laughed, John.
Yeah.
They laughed in my face. And they may have been right then. But I'll have the last laugh now, because, you know...
Well, if you look, survive.
If I manage to survive. Now, we're not... This isn't a beach. This is, you know, the middle of a hellhole. But we need to get from here to there, and I don't really know what to do. I am baffled. I am stuck. And so are you.
Yeah.
Now, I do have three movies with me, luckily, downloaded onto my phone, because... Luckily, I had them downloaded already, because you don't get a signal here.
Yes.
Yeah. They don't have mobile phones here yet, or the internet. So, you know, what are you going to do? But luckily, we came prepared. I had a whole set of different scenarios that I thought might come up, because this tends to happen to us a lot. Luckily, Giant Worms was one of them.
Yeah, you know? The rest of the DVDs are in the car.
Yeah, which, you know, that's fine, though, because... We brought with us, downloaded on our phones, let's see now. We have, from 2021, the far-flung future, we have Dune, directed by Denis Villeneuve.
Part one.
Dune part one, indeed,
yeah.
Yes, very true.
Yeah.
Then, from 1984, we have Dune, directed by...
You just said that.
We have Dune, directed by... David Lynch. I just said Dune Part 1, John, I think.
Oh, sorry.
This is just Dune from
1984. Mm. So, how come he could fit his whole film into one?
Well, we might get into that in a minute. and then from 1990, The Halcyon Days, we have Tremors, directed by Ron Underwood. And I don't know about you, John, but I am very excited to get into these films,
yes.
So let's sit down and watch them now. All right, John, well, it's worrying at our car, and it's doing a little bit of a wobble over there. I'm afraid it's going to get, they're going to get at the tires or puncture them or something. So we need to get a move on before they figure out how to scupper us and get us. So, John, what did you think of Denis Villeneuve's Dune from 2021?
Oh, he's at it again, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah.
What is he at?
He's
exactly.
He's very good with all these visuals, isn't he?
He's also very good at noises, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apart from
extremely.
One particular noise which kept annoying me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It was more in the soundtrack thing. The only way I can describe it is the Wonder Woman effect every time. Wonder Woman appeared in the Justice League movie, the like Snyder cut one.
No, yeah, I never watched that.
Yeah, it's terrible. There was like this. Ah!
And oh, right,
this happens quite a lot in the Dune at random places. But other than that, it was grand.
Yeah. Grand.
Grand.
So that's it. Okay, so moving swiftly on to the next movie then.
No, okay. I really like this movie. It is a visual treat.
Oh, yes. Oh, my, yes. Certainly.
And I do have this weird thing where I watched the 80s version. I watched David Lynch's version before I watched this one. Like, pretty much, it might have been the same day or the day before.
Ooh.
And I don't know if it's... There's a lot of... We'll get to the 80s version in a wee while, but they've got, like, a lot of voiceover and exposition and... You know, there's Dune is very dense,
extremely, yes.
And I was kind of watching this, going, "Would I know what's going on if I hadn't have watched David Lynch's one like directly before it?" Because it seemed like a lot of things were left out, but I wasn't sure if it was. You know, there is like a editing process when you're making any book into a movie, like look at the people who got annoyed that Tom Bombadil wasn't in Lord of the Rings.
I know. Could you imagine the pacing problems that would have caused?
Yeah, because I've seen a director.
The Hobbit had oh my gosh, like The Hobbit is barely one film, let alone three.
Yeah.
Oh. Exactly. Anyway, we're not here to rag on Peter Jackson, because I quite like Peter Jackson.
Yes,
but goddamn, those Hobbit movies. Oh my, how misjudged can you get? Oh. Well, I'm gonna say that I agree with you about that, but I had the perspective certainly of now I read the book a very long time ago when I was like 8 years old, maybe, I think. 8 or 9.
That is
I think
a very I read long time ago.
Yeah, I'm so old, John. So I have a lot of pre-knowledge of it. I'd also seen the 1984 one, the David Lynch Dune, before as well. Like I think like 2 or 3 times maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had it recorded. It was one of those ones we had recorded off TV, and it was just sort of on all the time, and it's super long, so it took up a lot of time. So I'm sure my parents were happy that we were occupied for that length of time. So I'm going to say that as far as Denis Villeneuve's one, I think it does an all right job of explaining stuff.
Yeah.
For the most part, there are a couple of, there's one in particular little thing that they maybe don't explain quite obviously enough.
Yeah.
Cause I watched this with my wife, who loved it, but she was not clear on exactly what was up with... They have these personal shielding devices.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
The mechanics of those are a bit more expressly explained in the older one.
Yeah.
Whereas I had to tell her, and I had read the book, so I was just like, well, oh, right, okay, here's the thing with the shields. That was the only thing, really, that was, like, a bit weird. And, like, if there weren't the shields, how come they're still getting stabbed? Well. Yeah. So, I
like that as an explanation for why it's not like a blaster heavy universe, and like there's also like I think it's in the 80s version that it kind of goes into an explanation of why there's no like androids, and because this is like the far, far flung future. This isn't like
10,000, the year 10,191.
Yeah, this isn't like your Back to the Futures or like Blade Runners where it's like, oh yeah, we're almost coming to the time where Deckard did this. Yeah, or whatever.
There is not going to be a time. I don't want to be bleak or anything, but I don't think there's going to be a time, any time in the future, where there will be humans left to say, "Oh, this is the year Dune happened." I don't think we're going to make it 10,000 years. But anyway,
wow.
I know. Oh, how bleak. We're not doing well, John. Anyway, no. This isn't about that. But, yeah, this film's gorgeous. The sound in this film is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, there is... In fact, there's a particular, like, language being spoken in this movie at one point that I just wanted to hear more of because it sounded so good. It was this... Whatever is happening on the Emperor's homeworld, someone's, like, giving, like, a sermon or something, and it's just this deep, bassy sort of thrum beneath all the words and...
Is that the one that's
so
almost
good,
like a Mongolian throat singing thing?
Yes, sounds a lot like a Mongolian throat or like nose singing chant, that thing. Yeah, it's I could have listened to that all day. It was so good. I think this film looks the business. Now, this is the guy who directed Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
And he directed a film called Arrival that I thoroughly enjoyed. It was much more sort of... There were some similarities with the sort of... sometimes the tone in this and the tone in Arrival kind of were similar at times, where it was being quiet and foreboding. And sort of the color palette in this is like sort of washed out a wee bit, which I think works really well for the horrible, horrible desert planet that they're on.
It feels very dry. It does not feel like a very forgiving atmosphere, and it shouldn't.
Indeed. Yeah. Either. So the basic premise is basically, you know, like intergalactic travel is impossible unless you have this spice melange that only exists on this one horrible, awful, awful desert planet that has giant sandworms that eat fucking everything that they don't like, which is everything, apparently. So this planet's basically... It's basically, I like to think of it as, what if there was one place that had all the petrol?
Yeah.
And everyone on the planet was like, yeah, I know. And everyone was like, well, we need that place for all the petroleum.
Like, yeah, what if there was a place you have all the oil and we need all the oil.
Yeah, so we'll go to war there. And maybe we'll make up bullshit reasons so we can go and just take it and have it.
Yeah,
weird that, isn't it?
I did read up a little on Frank Herbert, the writer of the original books, which you touched on, and he seems like a very intelligent guy. I've never read the books, unfortunately. I probably should get on top of that.
It's very good.
Because he seems very, like, all good sci-fi and fantasy, or most of the good stuff, always has that, you know, those added layers. It has, you know, more going on, the subtext in it, you know, and there's a lot going on in Dune. Like, even I watched the documentary of Jodorowsky's, you know, failed attempt at getting the getting a Dune movie made in the 70s, and he was kind of going to go more the angle of, like, focusing more on the spice and the effects of that, and, like, it is a drug.
Yeah, hallucinogenics, very Jodorowsky.
Oh, yes. And I would highly recommend that documentary, because that seems like the great... I think they even mention it as the greatest film never made. And there's a lot of links to movies that we love.
Mm-hmm.
Such as, you know, H.R. Giger being involved in Alien might have came directly from this, because of the, and this is a quote from Jodorowsky, the warriors that he gathered. He didn't call it a crew, he got warriors. And I don't know if you've seen any interviews or you've seen much of him as a person, but you can see why people just align with him and go, yes, let's make this. I think at one point Richard Stanley's in this, and I think at one point he mentions that Jodorowsky's almost like a dictator or a cult leader, and that he can just, like, kind of manipulate people that way. Not in a kind of negative way, like a dictator, but there's just something about him that he's passionate.
Got charisma.
He's got so much charisma and so much passion about the project that when you watch this, it's heartbreaking that this movie did not get made.
Reminding me of another ill-fated Richard Stanley.
Yeah, it was very apt that he was there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense then, that he's is involved in this documentary anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But, yeah, so that's something that I would love to see Jodorowsky have a crack at this. But again, it will never happen now.
Especially this 2021 version, you know. Sorry, the cinema-going public are more ready to take a chance with a large sci-fi, heavy sci-fi world. Back then, it was kind of, you know, these movies weren't doing well. This is, like, you know, back when Jodorowsky was looking at this was predating Star Wars and things like that. You know, the movies that really popularized these kind of sci-fi worlds.
I guess I think the term people like to use is space opera.
Space opera, yeah. But Dune's a very different thing. That like Dune's a very serious. Like, you can't get much more divorced from like the Star Wars swashbuckling world. No, this all feels very. I don't want to say dar, but kind of there is that seriousness to it. There is.
Yeah, it is.
It feels like things have weight.
Yeah, everything's really important, and even like the way the technology works in it's very like weirdly sensible while being outlandish and weird. Well, like
for the most part,
the stupid dragonfly machines. You're like, okay, that's a bit silly, but at least they're treating their base silly concept with like, oh, but you know. The way it breaks, this is a disaster. Obviously, this is a terrible design.
And I think almost that kind of proves the point, and that, you know, something like that in a Jodorowsky or even the Lynch version, you know, if they have those dragonfly transport vehicles, it wouldn't feel as out of place because it's almost a wee bit campier, it's a bit stranger, and a bit more surreal. But this 2021 version is so grounded and feels so real in a way that those things stand out as you kind of go, that's kind of ridiculous.
That's a cool idea that someone writing a science fiction novel had.
Yes.
That maybe shouldn't
have translated
to a film. That
would never get made.
yeah, maybe they should have. Yeah, because like you always got to cut some. Yeah, you do have to change things.
Oh, definitely.
To make them into movies. There are fanboys and crazies that don't like that. But those people are always going to be disappointed no matter what anybody does ever for them in their lives, I'm assuming. But yeah, changes need to be made. People were annoyed at Peter Jackson for the things he did to the Lord of the Rings, whereas I think those are the most, I mean, in fact, I'm going to talk about different adaptations of Lord of the Rings, probably in relation to the 1984 Dune, actually, in a little bit.
And I think that's a pretty good analogy to make because a lot of people have said that Dune is the sci-fi equivalent of Lord of the Rings. It's this massive, dense, like, very influential piece of literature. Yeah.
It has all this sort of hierarchical stuff as well. Like, I mean, in Lord of the Rings, you have like all these like royalty type people and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And you have all these families and clans and stuff. And you have that exact same thing in Dune where you've got the Duke Atreides and then the Harkonnens over here and the Emperor and his awful family and everyone's sort of like under the rule of this Emperor, but they're also sort of at war with each other. They're feuding and fighting. There are a lot of parallels you could draw between the Lord of the Rings as a story and Dune as a story. I'm not going to say that it's a ripoff or anything, because absolutely it's not. I mean, it has that high fantasy, but like weirdly grounded, people are still people and will fight each other and be selfish and sometimes they'll be disgusting. Which we get more into again in the Lynch version.
That is the thing. Like I think it's really weird to compare these two. Which we didn't realize when we kind of picked this category, that I didn't think there would be such a difference, but they are like two entirely different movies, two completely different approaches to the same subject. And I mean, I do think Villeneuve has a bit of a leg up in the sense that he's able to do this part one, and luckily he's got the green light to do part two. There was this whole issue of like he might not have got that. I would have been very disappointed because I want to see where this goes, and I think he kind of maybe on purpose shies away from the more unusual and surrealistic sci-fi elements in the story of Dune, and maybe he's going to reveal that in the second part, or maybe he wants
I think that
this is to kind of get everyone on board and then like you're in for a fucking ride.
It's drawing everyone in and getting them interested, and then you've got a built-in audience for your sequel who will show up and then be like, okay, whenever you do those weird things, because they're invested already, which is great. And like he was a great proponent of very much. There were some directors that it annoyed me with, but him, it makes sense. Whenever people were saying, oh no, don't show my movie streaming at home, please. Mm-hmm. During the pandemic, put it in a cinema. Christopher Nolan did that with that one that nobody liked.
Tenet.
That was it. I even forgot the name of it. Yeah, I believe the quote I think I remember seeing for that movie review was, Tenet is like a really loud mathematics exam. Whereas, and I guess if you're going to see that, you should see it in the cinema because you might not necessarily enjoy it at home.
Yeah.
Now, this movie, I can see a cinema sound system and the scale of a cinema screen being super important. I think he was worried that people wouldn't appreciate it mm-hmm. in that way, and therefore they would never get to the point of making part two.
Yeah.
However, I think this film is able to stand up outside of that. I think it stands up outside of cinema context. Yeah. The sound in it and the visuals in it are fucking incredible, but I think that can be appreciated. I mean, like, especially if, like, whenever people have their TVs at home now, you know, they're not necessarily massive, but they're way bigger than they, I think they are in the minds of the directors who are, yeah. like, say, a couple of years older than us, maybe, who are thinking about people watching stuff at home.
People are probably a lot more kind of aware of this stuff nowadays, and yeah. especially, I suppose, after the whole lockdown and all that craziness, you know,
yeah.
we're... I think a lot of people have probably invested money in their sound systems and TVs.
I know I did.
Because you were kind of stuck with it for a good while there, you know.
Yep.
But I think we should mention as well that the cast in this is fucking great as well.
They are fucking brilliant, aren't they?
I was really... Wow. I really like Oscar Isaacs as the mm-hmm. As Leto, Duke Leto.
Duke Leto Atreides.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought he was very good because I've only seen him in those Star Wars things, those latest ones. And so I've never really known him I don't think I've seen him like acting properly.
I've seen him in a few things and he is a fantastic actor.
Yeah, he's real good. And like,
if you want a recommendation for one of a film that he's in...
Yeah.
I would recommend Inside Llewyn Davis.
Oh, okay.
It's Coen Brothers movie. I don't know if it's both of them or just one of the Coen Brothers. It's fantastic. It's about a folk singer who's trying to break out and, you know, get he's a jobbing folk singer just before Bob Dylan becomes famous.
Oh, right.
So, like, people are into folk music, but not really yet. So he's struggling and his life's kind of a shambles and he's living on people's sofas and he's trying to get gigs around New York and stuff, and he's fucking brilliant and he is fucking fantastic in it. So yes, Oscar Isaacs, I rate him very highly, despite Star Wars.
Yes, yeah. And the actress Rebecca Ferguson has been in some crap recently. But I've always thought she was really good. Even the kind of her films I've seen her in, Doctor Sleep I didn't rate too highly, and but was she was okay, kind of the best thing in it.
Yeah, I liked Doctor Sleep, but not as a sequel to The Shining.
No, it seemed tacked on. It seemed very silly. But she's fantastic in this, and I kind of like that her character got a lot more screen time and was kind of focused on a good bit more.
Yeah,
because she's very important to that to our protagonist Paul.
Yeah, it's weird, everyone's got silly names. Leto Atreides and the Duke Harkonnen, Vladimir Harkonnen, and this is Paul. This is our main guy Paul,
and the Emperor Barry.
You know, Emperor Barry, please, I beseech thee.
You know, it feels really weird, but yeah, like, she's so important, and they do focus more on her, and yeah, I love that whole dynamic as well. But yeah, I have like minor gripes with this movie, but that's what they are, minor. Like, I thought they kind of and some of it can be explained in that it is the first part of I think he's only making two parts actually, but
I think so.
But we'll see. It kind of feels like it's missing something because the end of it doesn't feel like an end.
Absolutely. That was my biggest sort of problem with it, but at the same time I didn't mind so much.
Yeah. I would have minded if I knew he didn't get the green light for the second one, I would have been fucking
raging. If they didn't have that part one tacked onto the title as well, it would be really upsetting. But the fact that you know that it is the first part of a story makes the end a bit more palatable.
Yeah.
But it is very sort of like, oh shit, is that the end?
Yeah.
Is it over? Because, like, there isn't necessarily, no spoilers here, but there isn't necessarily a big climax that you'd expect from a movie as grandiose as this, but I'm sure it's coming down the road. Hopefully. Yeah.
Because I didn't actually think the, let's say the final fight that Paul has in this movie, I thought it was kind of weak. Even directing wise, it wasn't, you know, it didn't feel like there was any stakes to it really, but it was very short and it didn't feel like there was enough of a struggle. But again, it's all minor gripes to what hopefully will be, once the second part comes out, hopefully will be a fucking amazing triumph of cinema.
Basically, if I could sum this film up, I think it sounds great, I think it looks beautiful, I was absolutely enraptured by it pretty much the whole time, and I am very, very, very excited to see the rest of it. Did you see that?
What? What?
I think it was... Oh, no, sorry, it was just a bus. It's fine. I thought it was one of the worms. There was, well, in the last couple of minutes, traffic's been coming through. I didn't think this... See, I was confused how we ended up here in the middle of the Lurgan Deadlands in this horrible arid desert. But it seems like it is technically sort of the road.
Oh, yeah.
There was a delivery truck for a wine mart came through, and the worms got it and pulled it under. And it looked to me, from the sound of the jingles of the bottles, as far as I could tell, and I'm pretty sure I've got a good ear for this kind of thing, I think it was full of Buckfast.
Right.
So now we're dealing
with drunken sandworms?
Drunken, buckfasted up, caffeinated sandworms. Which is 1,000 times worse than just your regular common all-garden sandworm. I feel like if anything's going to allow a sandworm to burrow straight through solid rock, it's probably 15 bottles of Buckfast, eh?
You know what? It's probably an explanation of how the normal worms became these giant sandworms. It's just someone spilled some Buckfast on them.
Yeah, kind of like how nothing became worms in Prometheus.
Yep. Oh yeah.
When there were suddenly worms and there weren't worms before. Remember?
Why are you reminding me of that movie?
God, I don't know. It's just because it's a good looking movie that is confused.
Is this an ill attempt at segue?
This is a really bad segue. This is a really bad segue because it doesn't really work, because I feel like comparing those two films isn't really appropriate. So let's just go ahead and talk about David Lynch's Dune from 1984, the year of our birth.
This movie gets a bad rap.
It does. I do see why.
Yes.
But it's a bit much. I think the way people talk about it.
Yeah, like some people say some people count this as one of the worst movies made.
That's bullshit.
That's
completely
I find
not
this
at all
a
true.
Lot of fun and
yeah.
There are elements to it which if you look into, like David Lynch will say this is one of his greatest failures or his only failure or whatever way he puts it, but
whatever arrogant way.
He's a mental case. He's a very talented mental case, but a mental case.
Extremely talented, yes. Oh my gosh.
But he was fucked over, to put it bluntly, because he wanted this was initially going to be like a 4-5 hour movie, whatever it was. Then it was going to be a very long movie, so he could cover everything in the novel the way it
like
needed
a,
to be. And
a
the studio
Ben-Hur type epic of like, oh my god, I can't believe this movie's still on.
And I think it was the producer Dino Verentes or whatever you call him.
De Laurentiis, is it?
Yes, De Laurentiis, sorry.
Dino De Laurentiis. Italian horror guy.
Yes, yeah. And I don't know if it was him or maybe the studio executives or whatever, but they basically said, no, it has to all be cut down and blah, blah, blah. And then this is why there's an overabundance of voiceovers.
There's so much.
Yeah, like And actually, I like, at some point, I kind of like the breathy, you know, what I'm thinking voiceover thing. Like, for some reason, it works for me at some level. But I think one of the worst parts is the opening where you have Virginia Madsen, who,
I love her.
She just appears for this. And
I love it.
Understand about
it. I love it. Sorry, John, but I love the fucking opening of this movie because it's so stupid.
It's so stupid.
But it's weirdly got that. It has a little bit of David Lynch thrown into it that you can feel him in it. There's one point where she's talking away and she fades out.
for no reason.
And then she fades back in and says, "Oh, I forgot to tell you." That's literally what she says. She's a narrator. A narrator is omniscient, a narrator is omnipresent, a narrator does not forget details and then say in written dialogue, "Oh, by the way, sorry, I forgot to mention." It was really, I could hear David Lynch saying it.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen David Lynch? He's actually, he has a part in this movie where he's in like a sand thing and he's talking on a radio and being his whole cadence. But I could hear his cadence saying that line, and it put me in mind of, like, there's a scene in Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me that he's in where he's saying all this weird cryptic shit, and I could hear him saying the, "Oh, I forgot to tell you," you know, like, it's like you could have him say like a paragraph of nonsense.
It's good.
And then turn to walk away, stop, turn back dramatically, and then say, "And I forgot to tell you the color today is indigo," and then walk off. That's what I heard whenever Virginia Madsen said, "Oh, I forgot to tell you." I just saw David Lynch's face and I was like, wonderful. But there's not enough of that in this.
Yeah.
There's not enough of David Lynch in this David Lynch movie, which is a shame.
It really is. And I would actually love to see, although he refuses to even acknowledge this movie's existence in interviews and things now. And he refused to do, because they later went back, I don't know, when they realized they'd kind of fucked up, and they asked David Lynch to edit and like redo a longer version, and he just went, nope.
Oh, did they want him to do like reshoots and stuff?
Well, no, I think all the footage has been shot, but they weren't able to use it. They had to edit it down to literally just like just over 2 hours.
It's still quite long.
It's still very long, but it moves. Like, yeah. It's enjoyable.
And sometimes it moves clunkily.
Yeah,
especially towards the back third.
Yeah.
It starts really, really moving extremely jerkily.
Which is weird because the whole pace of it is lost at the back third because it almost seems like a montage at that point because it crams so much in. It's like the next 30 or 40 years are crammed into like this back third.
It's what put me in mind of whenever we were talking earlier about Lord of the Rings and the way it was adapted.
Yes.
There was an animated, you'll know this, John, Lord of the Rings movie long before the Peter Jackson, I'm going to make a three-part thing.
Yeah.
There was an animated Lord of the Rings that I think the story is that they ran out of money at some point and then they just had to sum up like basically the last whole book in a little bit of narration at the end, which is why this isn't quite on that level, because there are a lot of things happening and there was a lot of stuff was filmed, but it feels like they're rushing through. And now Dune, as we said, Dune is a very dense book.
Yes,
a lot of stuff happens. There is a reason Denis Villeneuve made Dune Part One, because it is one book. Dune is one book, and then there was a book called, I think, Children of Dune.
I think there were four or five.
Yeah, they're all quite thick, as it were.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can tell that. I think having this be one movie
is insane.
Is a huge misstep from the get go.
Yeah.
Because there's so much happens in that one book, and like David Lynch is known for like taking his time with things in a way that like. That's the thing. David Lynch is at his best when he has a bunch of time in a movie to have like weird periods of silence punctuated with things happening that are confusing and odd and distracting. You know, like that's like the whole of like the TV show Twin Peaks is that, you know, that's why it went on for as many episodes as it did. Like if you boil Twin Peaks down to the basic story, you could probably get it done with in like 8 or 9 episodes. But like, there's 2 seasons of that show, and then they came back and did like a whole other season like a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you do that, you'd lose something. It's wonderful. So I think this film loses me in that way, where I feel like it's someone trying to make something else, and they've ended up with this.
Yeah, it's definitely like it does sad me. This to me is the same as the Jodorowsky's Dune, and the fact that David Lynch didn't get to properly give his interpretation of this book. You know, he talks about it very negatively. You know, it's one of his worst experiences as far as dealing with these higher ups and all. And
yeah,
it is a shame, because I'd love to see what he originally envisaged, because there's so much good in this. And this has the, you know, we mentioned earlier that it does some things better than Villeneuve's Dune. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the best things is like he does not shy away from the more ridiculous and surrealistic elements of the book. And you know, even when it kind of looks a wee bit goofy, and you know, you've got what do you call the evil house, Harkonnens?
Oh, Harkonnen, like, yes.
You've got the barn like floating about all the time.
Oh my God.
But I kind of like how he's done. You know, like, he looks really disgusting. He's got these boils. He's got all these sores.
So again, that is not explained in either movie, but in the book, and there's, I don't know if this is spoilers. It's not really spoilers.
No,
he collects diseases.
Yeah.
In himself. That's his thing. That's why he's like that. They basically, I guess, like, maybe Frank Herbert just wanted to make the most vile creature he could possibly envision.
Yeah.
And I think in this movie they do a really good job of making him fucking disgusting in every way.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Both physically and mentally, and just on every level, he is abhorrent.
Yeah. I did actually find out that there's a lot of criticism of this movie from the LGBTQ community about he's the only kind of, it's quite clear that he's homosexual, or he has tendencies, and as the only one representing, you know, that community, they've made him this disgusting, vile creature.
A nightmare.
And I can see where they're coming from, but it didn't kind of dawn on me till I read that, so that could be an issue for some people. I don't think it was intentional, but it might have been. I don't know. Again, I haven't read the book, so I don't know how much of it is taken from them, or if this is just Lynch being a big weirdo. But
again, I read that book when I was 8, so I was not in any kind of space to even acknowledge that that was anything, because I was 8 years old.
Yeah,
I was like, weird sci-fi desert, these people are killing each other. And
took it as, you know, the barn as this disgusting creature is, you know, I didn't think anything more of it, just than him being horrible, and the head of this kind of the evil house.
They are so obviously the bad guys. The way they dress and everything, they're dressed in like, they're like, well, they're kind of dressed a bit like Gary Newman. And I like Gary Newman, so I don't know how I feel about that. I don't think of Gary Newman as a bad guy. You know?
Well, there you go. He obviously is.
I guess so, according to the production designers on this movie.
I mean, it makes sense that Sting's a bad guy.
It does, yeah. He's not good, but he's never good. He's never a good actor. He doesn't have a lot to. He has a couple of lines in this movie, and they are not delivered well.
No.
And he's not great. Whenever he's standing around smirking, it's all right.
Yeah,
but that's about it. Everybody else outshines him.
<That's not laughs>
I feel like I'm just ragging on fucking Sting here, but if I'm gonna directly compare it to, say, Denis Villeneuve's Dune, I'm gonna say that as far as pacing and just general storytelling, Denis Villeneuve's one is a lot better.
Yeah. The only thing is, this one does cover a lot more. I mean, the
Way too much more.
I almost feel bad kind of trying to compare them because, in a sense, you know, this was never going to work because trying to get all the Bene... What do you call the like...
The Bene Gesserit?
Yes. This movie goes much more into their involvement and then goes into the space travel and how that actually works. And there's so much stuff that Villeneuve was able to ignore, whole chunks, and kind of does feel like it's important lore that he's kind of just pushed to the side and went, I can explore that in the second one, or not at all. Yeah. Maybe I do feel like a lot of it will just be left to people who want to dig deeper into this, but this movie tries to cram it all in, and it falls apart because of it, in a sense, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why you have all this, all those voiceovers and all the narration.
Straight up narration there are. Yeah, there's straight up points where,
It's needed or you'd be lost. From what I'm led to believe anyway, looking into this, that was added once they knew this movie was going to have to be cut down and edited, severely edited, you know. So I don't know. I kind of feel feel bad for Lynch on this one because his true vision didn't get recognized or he wasn't allowed to explore it properly. But I still kind of enjoy it.
So do I. I still like it. I enjoy Kyle MacLachlan running around and doing his thing and pretending he's way younger than he is.
They definitely aged up the character.
I don't know if they did, but he's definitely older than Paul Atreides is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And it's not clear how much time passes between the start of the film and the end of the film because of the way the montage stuff happens.
Yeah.
Characters suddenly appear and are killed, and you're like, who was that? I don't know.
I found it really funny, though, when Virginia Madsen is... Because I didn't realize she was in the scene until I was like, oh, fuck, there she is. It's like, so she's an actual character. She's not a character. She's princess in it.
She introduces herself at the beginning as the Emperor's daughter.
Yep.
And then we don't see her for 2 hours.
Yep.
And then she has... I don't even know if she has a line.
I don't think she does. She's just standing
in scenes. I think she's just standing there going, and looking at things. Now, maybe in the original, what would have been the original cut, she might have had a hell of a lot more. I assume there was a lot more stuff between in the Emperor's place.
Yeah.
You know, or on his planet that I imagine would have justified her being this linchpin character, but she is not.
No.
I love the look of the worms. I gotta say that. I feel like that has basically been copied by a lot of other movies, in fact one of the other movies we're maybe about to talk about maybe borrowed heavily from the look of the worms in this movie, but all in all I think I'm with David Lynch in that it might be his greatest failure, in that it's this huge project that kind of does fall flat on its face at one point. But again, I'm with you, John. I still kind of like it. I still kind of enjoyed the first 2/3 of this movie. I do really like, and it is kind of amusing to watch it fall apart over the sort of the last 20 minutes to half an hour.
Yeah.
When it's just story beat. It's a million story beats in the space 20 minutes, and you're just going, your head is spinning by the time it finishes, and you're like, but, and then also at the end of this one, I am still left kind of like going, wait, is that the end? Because it still doesn't quite have a climax. Really, it has a bit of a climax where things are happening, but then it seems to just sort of fizzle out and go, and now, and then in a sort of a montage scene, and now this is happening. and then the next thing you see is cast in alphabetical order, and you're like, wait, what?
I forgot about that cast in alphabetical order, and it's really Dallas, or it's like one of those old...
It is exactly like a TV fucking movie.
It's like
people turning and looking at the camera and their name coming up, which actually Predator also does that at the end as well, which is so silly, but it's one of the things I do. It's actually one of the things I like about the movie is that it does that nonsense at the end. It's the cherry on top of the confusing cake.
Oh, brilliant.
Well, John, how long do you think it takes, like, a liter of Buckfast to get out of the system of a giant sandworm?
What?
Well, because, see, my theory is this. I'm trying to preemptively find a solution here. So, like, if they're, like, completely blasted on Buckfast, and they are whooping, you can see the old worm sign all over the place, like, scooting around. Like, they seem to be running into each other a lot now, and I can hear them sort of, like, giving each other shit, which, you know, is a classic Buckfast side effect. But one of the other things about Buckfast is that, yeah, it keeps you awake, but then when it drains out of your system, you are just completely fuckered.
Yeah, that's true.
So, it's really... I don't know how we're going to be able to tell if the worms do fall into a drunken, sleepy stupor. But while we're waiting for that to happen, John, can you tell me, what did you think of Tremors from 1990?
Tremors is great, isn't it?
I fucking love Tremors. Tremors is one of my all-time favorite stupid monster movies.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, like, the old sort of, like, something like The Blob or something, you know,
yeah.
like a movie with, like, a really simple premise and people just running away from it.
Yeah.
And slowly being taken out one by one or two by one every now and then by it.
I kind of, over the
course of the film.
I think the thing I appreciate most about it is, you know, it's always this kind of, well, cat and mouse thing in the sense that once the humans learn, oh, right, they learn something new about the graboids, as they're called in this, which is so stupid.
Like, such a good, intentionally bad name. Yeah.
To know, like, once they learn, oh, this is how it reacts to this, and they find a solution to how they're trapped initially, the graboids then learn, and then it's just this constant, like, oh, fuck, right, now we have to beat it this way, and it's always learning, and I really like that, you know, and the situations that they land themselves in, for the, like, I think bar maybe one or two of them, it does feel like, how the fuck are they going to get out of that, and
yeah,
the plans are kind of cool. I kind of like them.
Yeah.
You know,
sometimes the plans are crap, but they work, and sometimes the plans are quite clever. And you go, "Oh yeah, okay, that's pretty good." That,
like,
works.
I think the first one that they end up on the rock with Rhonda.
Yeah.
When they end up in the rock with Rhonda, and they start like pole vaulting. It's like, all right, well, we didn't know you had big sticks there, but
yeah, they were sitting there the whole time. I don't know where those sticks came from, but
no.
Fuck.
But no, it's really good, and like it's just fun and silly, and
yeah,
it's one of those kind of, you can see why this became a cult classic, and it's a good fun monster flick that's not trying to do anything more than just go,
yeah,
here's a wee fun movie.
Yeah, it has zero pretensions whatsoever. Yeah. They're just like, I mean, It's about big ass worms in the ground that eat people,
yeah.
And that's it. It doesn't need to be about anything else. But like the characters, it has some really fun, fun characters. Like Kevin Bacon
Valentine McKee, apparently.
His name's Valentine McKee, apparently. I don't know if that's said in the movie, but that's it. That's what his name is in the sort of the script, as it were.
Yeah.
So him and Fred Ward, who plays Earl, are just this, like, I don't know what they are to each other, but they seem to be, are they just good friends who've decided to work together?
Like, I don't know, like, they seem like a gay
jobs.
Couple.
They might also be that, but he's totally into chicks, though.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's to try hard, maybe he's covering for something.
And Earl's like pushing him on because he knows that if he realizes his true self, you know, it'll go quicker for them. But
yeah,
no, I love their dynamic. And at the start, I think the weakest part of this movie is the start. It kind of lingers too long. And at one point, I think you're watching them just sit and smoke for a while. You're like, okay, do something. That's like the very first scene. But once it gets on the tracks, it's very good. Like
Yeah.
I like the... It more or less begins with them two trying to leave this tiny town.
Yeah.
And then they come across you know, like a dead body, say, and go, all right, so they bring that back, like, and try and deal with it. They come again, across another thing and go back, and it's, they can never make it further than the outskirts.
It's the middle of fucking nowhere. There aren't phones around. Obviously, this is 1990, before everybody has a fucking mobile phone.
Yep.
But also, even if they did, this place would definitely be a fucking dead zone, because it's a desert in the middle of friggin' nowhere. Yeah, so every time, the center of the town seems to be this general store.
Yeah,
run by Victor Wong. Oh, who's a guy, I just love him. I love Victor Wong.
John Carpenter favorite.
Yeah, he's great.
He's in a good few.
Yeah, he's in Prince of Darkness, and he's in Big Trouble in Little China. He's the best thing in Big Trouble in Little China, probably. Definitely. He's sort of our storyteller in that. And he's just, he's great.
And he's also the one who comes up with the name Graboids.
He does. He shouts, Graboids! We should be able to name it! And like, yeah, you're right, okay. So he's great. But the whole town is centered around his store, it seems. That's where everybody gets everything, and that's where everybody meets all the time, is his shitty little shop, where you can buy anything, apparently. They try to leave, they find a body, they have to come back, they go again, like... They find another dead guy, and then they have to go back, and then they try to leave again, and the road is collapsed, and they're like,
"What
the fuck?"
At this point, they think it's a serial killer. They're just like, "Get out of town!"
They call the guys. They tell the guys working on the road, "There's a crazy killer cutting people's heads off," and that's fucking great. But we know that it's a monster because we're watching a film called Tremors, and. The characterization at the beginning is so good. Like, you get to know these people. You get to know who everybody is almost immediately, and it's simple. And they take their time getting even to the central premise, because at first they think it's little ones.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh no! And then that stuff's great. Like, their stupid plans are all stupid, but kind of make sense and are clever. The worms are great. Again, they kind of look like the worms from David Lynch's Dune.
Yeah.
Like, the way their mouths are is pretty much identical. The way the mouths open up is the same. Like, it's the same. It's like a tri, it's like a three sort of three triple jawed kind of thing that opens up wide.
Yeah.
And I think they do have the wee, I don't know if they have the wee teeth. I think it's all just meaty in there, but then they have the little thingies that come out like Alien, sort of like the mouth inside the alien's mouth in Alien, sort of.
Yes.
But three of them. That's really cool. The characters are great. I love Michael Gross is in this. He plays Bert, who's just the pitch perfect fucking dickhead gun nut survivalist wab who's just had the fucking carpet yanked out from under him because he's been waiting for like Russians to bomb them or China to invade or some other weird racist apocalypse, and he's like, oh no, it's giant worms, I'm not at all prepared for this. He's great, and it's silly, it's funny, it's sort of a comedy. It's very much a comedy.
It's lighthearted at the very least. You know, if you don't, I don't think I was like laughing out loud, LOLing, I believe they call it. There's some points later where some unexpected things happen that you're like, I kind of enjoyed, you know, where they, again, just where these worm creatures are learning what the humans are doing to try and deal with them. And, you know, I think that's it. It's just fun. It's just fun. Yeah. And there are inconsistencies in it with how the graboids kind of react to certain things. You know, at times when it's convenient, they will not chase after a certain vibration and things like that. But
you can kind of
overlook that.
Whether they'll chase after one thing over another. like, I don't know, like in Dune, they go to great lengths to explain that in both Dune movies about how the worms home in on whatever it is that they're going for and that they don't like loud noise. Whereas in this, it's like, They do get smart, though. I feel like that's the point, is that they learn, oh, that's a trick. They learn that they're being tricked every time. And they're like, no, I'm not going to fall for that. And again, like you were saying before, that adds this extra element of fun where it's like, oh, they find a way to defeat the worms. And then, oh, no, it doesn't work a second time.
Yeah.
Because the worms are like, nah, man, I'm not falling for that again. Go fuck yourself. That stuff's great. And I gotta say, the monster gore in this, I love. I love the monster gore. It's so over the top. It is so over the top. Like, and it's like bright orange.
Yes.
It's this bright orange nasty goop that just gets everywhere, and it's glorious. There's one point where it's literally raining down on people, and I love that. It's fantastic. Or they're like, they're dragging one out of a wall, and it's just spilling its guts everywhere. And it's like, oh, it's so good. It's so nasty, and it's so good.
And even like the wee silly things, like, you know, Kevin Bacon's character, the growth of his character, you know, realizing that he's all into these, you know, bleach blonde kind of Pamela Anderson type babes, let's say. And
sorry, John, I believe it's pronounced Bebs.
Bebs. And, you know, Fred Ward's character's trying to say to him, oh, there's more than that, you know, with this, when Rhonda appears on the scene, and just like him slowly coming to like realize that, yeah, it's cool that she kind of, you know, can survive, and she's smart.
She's
and blah,
her own
blah, blah.
Fucking
yeah,
person.
She's not like a ditzy idiot just waiting to be saved. Like, she's really proactive and actually saves him many times.
Yes. In fact, most of the time she's the one who's providing the answers to their problems, actually. And they're the ones who are fucking shit up half the time.
Even though she's like a geologist or something, they're like, well, what's this? And she's like, I don't know.
Yeah, she's like, I don't know everything, though, okay? I know about rocks and stuff. Yeah, that element's really good. And, like, yeah, again, like, just the dynamics between all the characters are really good. It feels like a real small town, everybody knows each other kind of scenario.
Oh, that teenager kid is so punchable.
He's such a dick. He always plays anything I've ever seen him in. Yeah. He's always been that guy, the annoying, whiny teenager. As soon as you see him, you're just
perfectly cast.
Yeah, yeah. So he's just fine, doing exactly the right thing. all in all, I think this movie has stood the test of time. It has stood up to multiple rewatches by me.
Yeah.
Over the years, I've seen this film many times, and you know what? I'm gonna say the sequels, which there are
many of.
Or several. There's at least Tremors 5, I think. I think there's another one in production.
I think there's a lot more than that. One came out very... we're coming towards 2022 here. I think one came out maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah, you may be right. I've seen, I think, 2, 3, and 4. At one point, they end up like... They're little like velociraptor-type things at one point. And... there's one with wings, and there's ones that fart fire and fly through the sky, farting fire.
This sounds like a Gremlins 2 type thing. Do they start drinking potions? And
it's sort of that. It's that escalation, but over several movies rather than just a huge jump, because Joe Dante didn't want to make Gremlins 2. So it's more a sort of a honest way there. They're not doing it maybe to take the piss out of the studio. They're doing it because they're like, oh, people love the nonsense in the first movie. Let's just ramp that up a bit and a bit more and a bit more till you get like ones that are literally farting fire and flying around the place, and it's so stupid. So this movie isn't quite that ridiculous tone, but you could see how they got there from here and be comfortable with it. And I would say if you have a free afternoon, you could do worse than watch the sequels to Tremors.
Okay.
The only returning character, I think, is... well, I think Fred Ward is there for one of them, but it's mostly Michael Gross, the guy who plays the gun nut.
Yeah.
Bert.
Which is just a strange direction to take that he's...
yeah, he's in all of them, and he's like... his whole thing is like he's basically like... paints himself as like an exterminator of these worms because he's been able to deal with them before, so he's made it like his life's work to find and destroy them all, sort of, and that's how they motivate the story to happen in the subsequent movies. And it works.
Everyone has their niche.
Exactly, everyone has their little niche. I don't know if Reba McEntire comes back as his wife for the sequels.
Probably not.
She's probably too busy country singing or whatever. She's all over the soundtrack of this as well.
Oh, that, I will say the soundtrack in this is rubbish.
It's rubbish, but it's appropriately rubbish.
Appropriately rubbish. lot of harmonicas.
It strikes the exact tone it needs to. The harmonicas are a little intrusive whenever they come up.
A little?
Yeah, okay, they're extremely blaringly awful and overwhelm everything else.
Yeah.
But I feel like it works with the tone that they establish eventually. Early on, it's a bit, but as you go on through the movie, you're like, oh, there's that harmonica tune back.
Yeah.
Of course.
As the movie picks up pace, it's not as noticeable because...
Yeah,
as we've mentioned many times, it's just like it becomes this fun romp, and you're not really too invested in the music at that point.
That's a really good way to sum up the movie. It's a fun romp, and you don't have to get too invested really in any of it,
yeah,
to enjoy it thoroughly on any level. Well, a busload of tourists showed up and were immediately swallowed by the worms. Yep. I don't know what the hell a tour bus was doing in Lurgan. I feel like we're ragging on Lurgan a lot, but if you've been there, you'll know. Anyway.
And if you live there, you'll never hear this.
Aye, indeed. Oh, gosh. Yeah, so there's a few survivors sort of rolling about in the sands, but... they'll be grand. We can get to them and maybe we'll rescue them in a little bit. I don't know. But before we rescue these people in peril, John, which of these did you think was the best movie and why is it probably Tremors?
I'm going to cheat entirely.
Oh, no, don't.
Because what I watched the documentary Jodorowsky's doing that. I'm going to put that in, even though that's cheating.
You cheeky fucker. That is cheating, John. You're right.
That's cheating, but... Mainly because I just want to kind of talk about it a bit more.
Yeah.
Because I really think you should watch this.
So your favorite one of these films is technically a film that never managed to exist. No. Okay, go ahead.
There's so much, like, see when you watch this documentary, like, every new detail that he adds is like a dagger to the heart because you're like, oh, why did this movie not get made? Oh. Pink Floyd were going to do the soundtrack.
Oh my gosh.
David Carradine was going to be...
Was he going to be the Duke? Or
He was going to be the dad, the Paul's
Leto.
Dad.
Yeah,
yes. Salvador Dali was going to be the Emperor.
Okay, I can see that. Absolutely.
And he was going to have like a flaming giraffe, apparently. I don't know how they were going to do this.
Holy shit.
This is before Alien. H.R. Geiger was going to design the world and the architecture for the Harkonnens. I always mess up the names.
It depends. Sometimes they call them Harkonnen, and sometimes they call them Harkonnen, and sometimes they call them Harkonnen.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So there's a bit of confusion there, depending on which person is saying the name in both the films, actually. In both Villeneuve's and Lynch's, I think people say them differently depending on their accent. I think Jürgen Prochnow, who plays the Duke in the 84 one, I think calls them Harkonnen.
Yeah.
But that might just be because of his accent, maybe.
Probably. I'll blame my accent as well, then.
Okay.
But Orson Welles was going to be the Baron as well.
That's perfect.
And the way they managed to convince him, they found this restaurant that he always ate at. And then he was like, no, I don't want to be part of it. I'm done with all that shit. And apparently Jodorowsky went, how about you come and do this movie? Every day you're on set, the chef in this restaurant will make you meals. So all you're doing is sitting there eating all day. And he's like, I'm in.
Fucking hell.
Man, it's so elegant.
That is wild. I am really annoyed I didn't watch this documentary before.
It's so good. Jodorowsky or Hodorowsky, I never know how to pronounce his name, but he has this massive big book, and I hope someday they publish it, because I don't think the movie will ever get made. And I think it'll never get made with the same eye to detail and the same vision that he has. But he has it all laid out. They sent this book to studios, and the studios were just like, no, we can't give you the money for that. There is actually a lot of people have this idea, this misconception, that his movie was going to be like 15 to 20 hours long. And yeah. And so did I before I watched this documentary. I'd heard all these rumors. And it's not. It's like in a fit of passion, he's getting really annoyed that the studios wouldn't let him make this because they're like, it has to be an hour and a half. Has to be an hour and a half. Like, to, and restricting the time.
Yeah, popcorn flick. Yeah.
Exactly. And he was like going, no. I'll make it and it'll be 15, 20 hours. I don't care. You know? It's an offhand. Like, it's in a fit of passion.
Aye. You know? He's taking the piss. He's just angry.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. It's such an interesting watch. That's why I'm kind of hijacking this as my wee gateway to
a movie we didn't watch.
Yeah, a movie that you didn't watch.
Dune movie, yes. Jodorowsky's Dune, the documentary about the film that fucking that he never got to make.
And like the images and everything, like the amount of thought and detail that went into the designs, and Mick Jagger was gonna play Sting's role in it.
Okay, that's hilarious. Way better.
Yeah. Oh, I could just see him strutting about.
I hate Atreides. I hate the Atreides. All right, Mick. Cool.
But I would honestly recommend watching this. Other than that, 2021 June, I really am looking forward to the second one. I kind of don't want to pick between 2021 June and 1984 June in the sense that, I want to see the 2021 one finished almost before I think it is going to be a better overall.
Yeah. It's half the story, if even.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go for Denis Villeneuve's, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was such an experience for me watching it. I really was just like, I was in a wall of sound the whole time. And just like, I so enjoyed just that aspect of it alone was so good. But everything else, I think of it is extremely well made.
It's a very well made movie. Yeah.
It looks beautiful. Now, I will say that I do have an affection for David Lynch's Dune.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because I'd read the book whenever I was like 8, and then I probably saw David Lynch's one maybe like a year later or something.
Mm-hmm.
And was just like, I think it was the first time I had read a book and then seen it done as a film. And I remember just being fascinated by that concept.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are huge, huge flaws with it that are really hard to overlook now. When I watch it and I'm like, if only. And you can say all you want, that yes, he was kind of screwed by the studio and they mess it up. But, that doesn't save other films. That doesn't suddenly make it better necessarily.
Yeah, this is still the end product. So
yeah,
this is
the end product was extremely flawed. I like everybody in it, mostly. There are some... the wee kid is just like, it's suitably disturbingly surreal, actually, all the stuff with his weird sister that shows up, and that stuff's so rushed and thrown in there, and you're like, where the fuck did that come from? Oh, by the way, then he had a sister, and also she aged quickly, and here she is, and she is a witch, and she is powerful. And you're hearing all this stuff in the narration, and you're like, slow down, stop.
Yeah,
stop.
Whose sister? What?
Take a fucking breath, like Jesus Christ, but they couldn't take a breath because the film had to end.
Yeah.
So it was like, no, here we go, and this and that. And then she shows up out of nowhere. In the climax, and you're like, how the fuck did she even get here? And then it's a bunch of nonsense, and then she just climbs out through a hole in the wall, and I was just left there baffled by the whole thing. Just like, what the fuck is happening? So there is a certain fascination with it because of that insanity.
Yeah.
But I think, to be honest, if I was going to rank these three movies, I think it would be Dune, Tremors, Dune for me, because... I know that's confusing because two of those are the same. But like Denis Villeneuve at the top, I think. And like, I love Tremors. I will watch Tremors any day of the goddamn week.
Tremors is great.
Tremors is a wonderful film. It's so stupid.
It doesn't have the depth of you know. Well, I mean, the depth of Dune is coming from Frank Herbert, really. Well, actually, I suppose it's coming from Frank Herbert, but it's also how each director, each team... interprets it, and I think Villeneuve does a better kind of job at making it seem more serious, or like really touching on those kind of more real world comparisons that that we didn't explicitly name, but which are fucking obvious.
Indeed, yes, absolutely. So that stuff is very good, but that is baked into the book initially. So Tremors is wonderful. David Lynch's one is deeply flawed in so many ways, and I wish it wasn't. I wish it was the movie he wanted to make. But it isn't.
But again, Dennis as we Bill keep saying, like, you know, it's still enjoyable if you go into it with the right mindset, you know.
I don't think any of these are bad movies. I think they're all very good. It's just that David Lynch's is bringing up the rear, as it were.
In fact, I think it does a better job in the sense of giving, of outlining more of the lore of the Dune universe than Villeneuve's. But again, it's actually one of its drawbacks as well.
It takes too much effort to give you the backstory. Whereas I think,
like, Villeneuve's been a lot more clever, kind of going right. We don't really need to know about that too much. And there have been oversights in some areas, I think, you know. But for the most part, as long as the narrative is still understandable and still, you know, you're following Paul. That's basically it.
Yeah, the narrative is intact. And you don't necessarily need to know a lot about the way the spice is used to facilitate intergalactic travel.
Yeah,
They spent a lot of time on that in the early goings in the David Lynch one, which I think is a mistake, because then we have later on, that's time that later on could have been spent actually maybe allowing the story to breathe a lot more. But again, I think trying to do this whole book in that amount of time is just a non-starter in the first place.
Yeah.
So I think even with that, even if they had cut down that stuff at the start, the end would probably still have had to have been somewhat rushed as well. Tremors, I fucking love Tremors. I will always love Tremors. Tremors is deep in my heart. But I'm going to pick Denis Villeneuve's Dune. You cheated.
Yeah, I cheated.
And I love that you picked a movie that was not one that we agreed upon.
And now I've set a precedent for this.
No, don't know.
Every week I'll be like, I watch this other movie that has nothing to do with it.
Well, if there was a stenographer here, I would ask them to strike that from the record. Do not make a habit out of coming up with a random other movie you happen to watch and say, oh, it's a better movie, though.
You know what?
But in this case, it makes sense.
In this case, it's Jodorowsky. Absolutely. You know, he's a rule breaker.
Indeed. You're like Jodorowsky. So I love that we're saying his name both ways constantly because we just don't know.
At least one of us will be right.
I know.
And the other one will be like, did you hear how that dick pronounces his name?
Is it Jodorowsky? Is it Jodorowsky? Is it Jodorowsky? I don't know. I bet we could easily... You watched the documentary, so I feel like you should know.
I probably should.
but I haven't watched that documentary yet, but I might have a go at it maybe quite soon, actually, because I am fascinated by that man.
I'd highly recommend this movie.
Indeed. So, John, now that we've established that you're a rule breaker and you get to pick whatever movie you feel like, which of these movies do you think best helps us get to our car and get out of here?
I'm going to cheat again. No, I'm not.
Star Wars.
Star Wars. Just fly away. Use a lightsaber on it.
Exactly.
Or use the Force. That's generally their Deus Ex Machina. In universe explanation of how to do stuff.
Tremors is the movie with all the plans.
Tremors is the movie with all the plans, but there's one particular part of both Dunes, actually. I think it's in both Dunes. The out of rhythm walk.
Yeah, the silly dance. I love how, like, it's worth talking about how they handle this in both movies, though. In the 1984 Dune, they just say offhand and have some narration about, like, just walk with no rhythm.
Which,
and then that's all you need.
Have you ever tried to walk without any rhythm?
No, man, I got rhythm in my soul, yo.
Yeah! You're a bass player, so yeah, it's impossible.
Yeah, I'm part of I'm a rhythm section guy.
You'll explode. Your whole being will crumble.
It's hard to do. Yeah, and like, I love how they do it in the Villeneuve one, because they do it how it's how it's described in the book.
Yeah.
And it looks like a silly, daft 80s dance.
It's like John Cleese doing the Ministry of Funny
it's
Walks.
It's sort of the Ministry of Silly Walks, isn't it? Yeah, it's like something he would do in that sketch.
Yeah.
Where you're doing like two steps forward and then a weird slide to the side, and then like it's almost like you're like, then we shuffle, and then and then a big step, and then another slide. It's just like, you can hear the terrible fucking late 80s, early 90s awful like pop song that has dance move instructions in it playing in your head when you're watching the wee man in the video shuffling across the desert. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that, John, but if I was to sit upon your shoulders, are you the man to do this? Do you think you could deliberately have no rhythm?
I play lead guitar, I have no rhythm at all.
You're the one who needs to be kept in check.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I shall try to restrain...
If I am untethered, I will have no rhythm at all.
I shall try to restrain my sort of Pavlovian rhythm section response of trying to keep other people in time as we shuffle out here across the desert among the grabbing hands of the tourists.
We'll try all the time signatures at once.
Indeed. Right. Well, also I'm lazy, so you're just going to have to drag me. So I'm just going to lie down here. Yep. Let's go. Okay. Cha-cha slide, motherfucker.
Yep.
Come on. Here you go. We are on Twitter. We are at 7-Day Apocalypse. That is at numeral 7-Day Apocalypse. If you want to email us, you can do so on filmcast@thisweeksapocalypse.com. Yes, filmcast@thisweeksapocalypse.
Could you speak a wee bit more just jointed, please? It's helping.
We are here. We will survive. We will see you next week.
Bye.